the show.
You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 44. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you once again. It's Geek Month, damn it. Geek Month rolls on. Episode 3 out of 4 is happening right now. First week, we had the Slump Busters, one of the most fearsome pub quiz teams in all the nation, I might say. They're going to be at Geek Bowl. We'll get to Geek Bowl here in a second. Second week, Quizmaster Johnny, my personal favorite Quizmaster, party host, all around great guy. Loved having him. Haven't seen him in a while, so that was a fun chat just to catch up with him and get a peek inside what it's like as a Quizmaster. Now this week we go even deeper into Geeks Who Drink, and I'm talking to Christopher Short, and Christopher Short is their chief editor. So every question that's written goes through him. It passes in front of him. So direct all your accolades and perhaps your scorn. But after talking to him, I don't think you'd have much scorn, because there's a very sort of long and conscientious and thought out process that goes into creating quiz for 6 nights a week. Something like 22,000 questions a year. That's way more than Jeopardy. And speaking of Jeopardy, Christopher Short is a 6-time Jeopardy champion. Now, people ask him a lot, did you get the job at Geeks Who Drink because you were a Jeopardy champion? And the answer is no. And the story is a little bit the opposite of that, which we'll get into when the episode comes. I don't want to step on the episode. But by his own admission, the editorial process of Geeks Who Drink is a little bit of a black box. You know, you don't know where this comes from or how it gets generated or, you know, how it comes to be every week. And we get incredible insight into that process here. I really adored this chat. I didn't know what to think going into it, but I talked to him and we really hit it off immediately. We both don't watch Game of Thrones, so we kind of bonded over that. That makes us weird. I know I've had many conversations in my real life with people that are like, you don't watch Game of Thrones? Why don't you watch Game of Thrones? And I say, I can't do it. I know it's really good. I know it's well made. I know it's violent and there's fucking boobs all the time on it and stuff. And admittedly, Peter Dinklage is a badass. I love when that guy comes on screen, but it's too much. It's too much mythology. It's too much, too large a world to penetrate. And as Christopher notes in this episode, if a dragon shows up, I'm pretty much out. I don't care. Wizards and shit. Nope. Not for me. So sorry, Game of Thrones fans. It's not really for me. It's not really for Christopher either, which is surprising given his title as chief editor of Geeks Who Drink. So this is the 3rd episode out of 4 in this series, in the Geek Month series. We're going to get that trending as a hashtag, I'm sure. By the way, follow me on Twitter, JOATpod, and like me on Facebook. Got a bunch of new likes this week, which was really exciting. Facebook.com/JOATpod. So make sure to check me out and you'll get fresh content. I'm posting more frequently on the Facebook page. I'm tweeting a little bit more. I was at what I sarcastically referred to as the hottest concert of 2001 earlier this week. Went and saw Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake, and Authority Zero. So in all honesty, an awesome show. But when it was over, or when it was near over, I didn't even stay to the end, which only gives this story a little bit more juice. But I didn't even stay till the end. And I was outside and I didn't actually talk to the security guard, but I was thinking about it. And I wanted to go up to her and say, you know, these ska kids are pretty well behaved, aren't they? And just as I was starting to make my move to go over there and say that to her, I go, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, don't say that to her. How old are you? And officially, I think saying something like that makes me about 135 years old. So I did not say that, but I go, you know what? I'm done. I better just go home before I say something even more stupid and old man-ish. Anyway, awesome show. So I posted a little bit about that on Twitter. I'm linking to cool shit on Facebook, so make sure to go to those places and get your bonus John of All Trades content. Additionally, if you are downloading us on iTunes, thank you. Please take a minute to rate and review us. Same deal if you're listening on Stitcher. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And take some time to rate and review me there as well. Those are but two ways to get John of All Trades. always go to our website. There's new stuff there constantly. johnofalltrades.us. That's J-O-N ofalltrades.us. And every Monday, new episode is announced. Every Wednesday, new episode gets posted. This is the 44th episode and the third episode in the Geeks Who Drink Geek Month. Which reminds me, if you are not going to Geek Bowl, what the hell is your problem? Why are you not going to Geek Bowl? It is February 7th. It's a Saturday, February 7th in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the Isleta Resort and Casino. It is a dork bacchanal. It is one of the most fun times that you can possibly have. And this entire series is leading up to Geek Bowl. It's designed to get you excited for Geek Bowl. And just so you know, they're not giving me any money to do this. I just happen to really like Geeks Who Drink, and I love Geek Bowl, and it's so fun for me to get to shed a light on something that I love to do. So this is not a sponsored post. This is just out of sort of my interest and my love for this company. February 7th, the Isleta Resort and Casino, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Tickets are going very fast, so make sure to get in on the action. If you were on the fence, you weren't really sure, hopefully this pushes you over the edge. And if it doesn't, maybe the Dan Band does. So the Dan Band is an awesome band. You saw them in The Hangover. You saw them in Old School. They're hilarious. They're the reason why everyone sings Total Eclipse of the Heart at karaoke night that particular way now. I'm not going to do it again. I did it in the Slump Busters episode. But it's Geeks Who Drink. It's Geek Month. It's Geek Bowl. How many more times can I say geek? Just this once more. Episode 44. Geeks Who Drink, Chief Editor, you get a look inside the black box, you get a peer behind the curtain, you get to look up the dress of Geeks Who Drink, so to speak. Metaphorically, of course, because doing it literally is a felony. So, let's commit our metaphorical non-felony. I'm getting lost in this analogy, it's time to start the episode. With Christopher Short, six-time Jeopardy champion, and he talks about that in this episode, you're going to love it. Chief Editor of Geeks Who Drink, and the episode starts right now. Sitting here talking to Christopher Short, and you are the head writer? Is that what your title is for Geeks Who Drink?
The chief editor, in fact.
The chief editor.
It's kind of half of one, or, you know, 12 of one, half...
Six of one, half
six
dozen...
Of one. It's a little column A, a little column B. It's, won't get fooled again.
Right. Yeah. So you are the chief editor at Geeks Who Drink.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about what your job entails.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Most of my writers are just freelancers, you know. A lot of them are quiz masters as well.
Okay.
That's where we get the bulk of our writers from. But my job entails really kind of smoothing them all out.
Okay.
So I'll get around from a writer and, you know, for various reasons, maybe a couple of the questions won't fit the subject matter that we're normally accustomed to, or, you know, the tone, I'll punch it up with some jokes, or put in, you know, a hint if there's something that's kind of really niche, like an all sports round, then I'm always dropping in things from elsewhere in culture that will help clue in people who, you know, aren't big sports fans.
So right, right, right.
We're trying to make the quiz as accessible as we can. You know, you have to have a certain level of learning to seek out pub quiz as a form of entertainment in the first place, but, you know, we don't want to punish you for not knowing things that you really shouldn't know.
Right, you don't want the quiz to be too esoteric, right?
Exactly, right. I mean, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, ultimately, it sounds kind of evil villainy, but it's sort of my job is to decide what people need to know and make sure that that's what we're quizzing them on.
Well, that's funny because, I mean, you mentioned punching it up with some jokes. So, I mean, part of what you do, given the brand of Geeks Who Drink, is humor writing.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit, I wouldn't say that's a big part of the job. We do leave a lot of that up to our quiz masters, and of course, it's normally, you know, we hire from sort of improv and stand-up comedy circles and people who are going to be comfortable on the mic and punching up the material with their own jokes. But, you know, a lot of the times where you'll see my influence will be in the round titles. In the anytime you have a speed round and there's, you know, a 2.5 minute chunk of music, it's normally something super sarcastic, and I pretty much invariably pick those. So, you know, you can get a lot of mileage out of a funny round title and, you know, some weird juxtapositions. That's most of what I do humor-wise.
Yeah, no, I get you. Because the round titles, you know, a lot of times when you get a Geeks Who Drink email, like if you're on an email list for a bar, you know, they'll send you five of the round titles in advance. And you'll go, sometimes there'll be one that's funny that'll grab you and you go, okay, you know what? I was borderline about playing tonight. I got to play tonight now, though.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. We have, just as long as we're being candid, we've had the problems in the other direction. We've had some learning experiences that way where there are round titles that sounded really harsh in the preview email that, you know, then if you get there, you realize that that wasn't what we were talking about. But, you know, every once in a while, we do get in a little bit of trouble that way. We've learned to avoid certain things in the round themes.
Well, like, can you give me an example?
Oh, you know, I mean, I think everybody probably knows that there are just some hot button words. It's never been anything super duper. Like, you know, it's always been kind of a gray area, and we do operate in that gray area a lot.
I'm sure.
You know, we're a company that's been around for 8 years now. What I always say is that, you know, when we started out, it was sort of, you know, Seth MacFarlane and South Park and all that kind of, you know, Team America kind of stuff, where it was just all shock humor all the time. And that's
right.
Sort of what we were born and raised on as a company. And it's a lot later in time now, and a lot of that stuff doesn't work anymore. So, you know.
Yeah, I would say, it may not work in that exact flavor, but I think you still have that quite a bit. Like, I mean, I remember Kristen Schaal dressing up in a big vagina costume on The Daily Show.
And that's it, you know. It's a function of having expanded to multiple markets and stuff, too. What plays in Dallas and what plays in Portland are not necessarily the same thing. But,
won't play in Peoria.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't even think we have any quizzes in Peoria.
Right.
That'll be a whole other kettle of whatever they have in Peoria. Yeah. I'd say fried foods, probably.
That feels right, having family from Illinois.
Yeah.
That just feels right. So take me through, I mean, you said you had freelance writers. How many freelance writers approximately do you have working for you at any one time?
At any given time, you know, it's probably between 10 and 20.
Okay.
If you actually look, we have a sort of a private little Facebook group where we kick around our ideas and stuff, and it actually has like 40 members in it, but since everybody's doing it freelance and sort of doing it as a side gig, you know, they get active and less active.
Yeah, sure. It's got to ebb and flow like, you know, like anything else.
Yeah, which again is sort of why I need a person in my role to make sure that it all sounds like it's coming from the same group of people.
Right, yeah, sort of editorial unity, basically.
Yeah, we talk about the hive mind, like, you know, the Onion doesn't have bylines, never has.
Right.
It's just an idea that they put out all of the content as an entity, and so that's kind of the ideal that we look forward to.
Yeah, I get you. So can you take me through sort of from invention to what appears in front of quizzers at Quiz, how a round comes to be? Can you just take us through that process a little bit?
Well, you know, the inspiration part of it is a mystery to me sometimes.
Okay.
I'm sort of, you know, I'm a word guy, I'm a trivia guy, I'm not necessarily an idea guy. So, but the writers will bring it to me. I'm not the sort of person who normally assigns a theme.
Sure.
Sometimes I wish I were, because that would sort of make some things a lot easier. But no, the writers are the ones who are, you know, doing whatever they do during the day, and they come up with their ideas and pitch them to me. I sort of, you know, decide if that sounds like it's going to be a winning concept or not, and then they write it. It comes back to me, and that's when I sort of put the, you know, all the bells and whistles in it and ship it off to fact check. Now, we do have another, usually 5 or 6 fact checkers also working on a freelance basis, and they have backgrounds in library science or, you know, copy editing for newspapers.
Right.
Or,
of course.
You know, something. It's not, you know, it's not just, I think I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, I try to have a little bit of a, be picky about that. And none of the fact checkers are writers either. I've always kept a wall up that way. So that, just to keep from getting things confused, frankly.
Right. Yeah, that's probably good.
And then after that, it just goes into the quiz, you know. Jason Hart is one of my associate editors, and he does the actual programming of the quiz, so he's in charge of making sure that, you know, we don't do sort of the same theme or the same format on consecutive Wednesdays, for instance.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. How long does it take for a round to go from someone pitching you an idea to appearing in the quiz?
You know, it could be a day or two, or it could be months. I do have a backlog of submitted rounds that just, you know, for whatever reason, you're finding out a lot of my idiosyncrasies in this interview, which is fun. But, you know, if it doesn't quite grab me right away, then I'm not afraid to let it sit for a few weeks until I, you know, want to take another look at it and see what I can do to freshen it up. So.
Right. Well, and that doesn't so much work with a recently in stuff round.
Exactly. Those are the ones that I actually, you know, I mean, I do assign. I actually, Jason Warren out of, I think he's out of Dallas. He writes all of those recently stuff rounds for us. And, you know, I just sort of, we do them on a Monday 1 week, Tuesday the next week, Wednesday the next week, et cetera.
Okay.
So,
oh, you just rotate them through the days.
Yeah, exactly. That way we make sure that everybody is getting one every, you know, 5 weeks or so.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense because I, you know, sometimes I won't go to quiz for a while. I played probably at least once a week for 3 years. And, you know, there were some times where I'd feel like I'd seen it like a lot in a row, but it was just because I hadn't gone to quiz in a while. I go, oh man, we got another current events round? That's weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's,
there's a method to it. We, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Ideally, you know, a lot of our rounds will have something that touches on current events in one way or another.
Yeah, and a lot of times I've noticed with like bonus questions.
Yeah, that's one good place to do it. You know, bonus questions are a different kind of entity because it's got to be something that somebody in the bar is going to know, for one thing.
Right.
But also, you know, that's a time where you can use a question that you are sort of randomly guessing if you don't know it, because eventually somebody will write down the right answer, you know.
Right.
If it's what state produces the most eggplants, that's a terrible example, but, you know, right. We could use that because eventually someone's going to write down. There are only 50 states, after all. It's probably not going to be Rhode Island.
Yeah, no, probably not. Yeah, or, you know, any big non-ag state. But,
yeah, exactly.
Chances are it's probably California.
I would imagine so. Actually, here's a pro tip for all of our quizzers.
Okay.
Any time that we ask what country makes the most of anything, the answer is pretty much always China. It's a big damn country.
Yeah, that produces a lot of shit.
It really does.
So, yeah, remarkable. Are there any rounds that are particularly the bane of your existence to write or to edit or to sort of deal with?
You know, I think that a lot of our most clever round types are also the ones that I kind of get tired of. Like, before and after.
Oh, Jesus.
Which, of course, we didn't invent or anything, and I'm sure that everybody who ever does that format probably has the same issue, but trying to make sure there's just the right hints because you have basically, like, one clause to...
Yeah.
Describe each of the two things that are getting mashed together. Trying to make sure that you're not misleading people. Trying to make sure that you're looking for Kristen Bell rather than Frozen or yeah. Anna, you know, that kind of thing. So those usually take quite a bit of time for me. The same thing goes with, and actually long-time quizzers will know that we've slowed down quite a bit on those sooner or later rounds because it's really tough to know, you know, what a good two-point clue is that's going to clue in the people who are really knowledgeable but leave everybody else out.
Yeah, that's got to be a tough balance to do.
And you know, that's just sort of, that's my bread and butter, is, like I said, sort of knowing what people know. And if it's something that's out of my area of expertise, then it's especially like, you know, I'm the only person in the world who doesn't watch Game of Thrones, so.
Hey, you're talking to another one, believe it or not.
Is that right?
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, well, I have idiosyncrasies, especially given my job is that I've just never been much of a sci-fi or fantasy guy for whatever reason, so.
No, there's a guy who writes for the AV Club, and I think I brought this up on an earlier podcast, so anyone listening, forgive me if you've heard this before, but there's a writer for the AV Club, and I want to say it's Kyle Ryan, I'm probably wrong, but he says anytime we start involving wizards and shit, I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't care.
That's exactly it. I mean, like, I draw a line of if a dragon shows up, I'm done. With the exception of How to Train Your Dragon, which is a delightful franchise, but I also have a small son, so.
Right, I have a daughter. She's only 9 weeks old as of this interview.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And so she's not really watching movies yet. She just watches whatever I got on in the background. But you know, while I'm feeding her. But yeah, those. It's funny you brought up before and after because those are the bane of my wife's existence because her brain doesn't work that way. And so those are always
really?
Yeah, those are just tough for her for whatever reason. And then
that's funny. You know, I actually I don't think I've ever considered that, because it's sort of like, it looks like that sort of puzzle. The other thing about before and after is you've got to make sure that, that you're hitting the pronunciations right. Like, you know, you can't really say, like, I don't know, Google Lee Harvey Oswald, because that doesn't make any sense. You know, it's got to be, it has to be a phonetic mashup, too.
Right. My favorite one from, it was from a Geek Bowl, and it was Two Girls, One Cuppola.
Two Girls, One Cuppola. That's, actually, we had that story in Wired Magazine a couple of years ago, and that was the only answer that they printed was Two Girls, One Cuppola. It does very much sort of summarize our, we try to walk that line between highbrow and lowbrow.
Yeah, no, it's the yin and the yang of the Geeks Who Drink brand.
We'll have a whole round on Mozart and a whole round where we're replacing the lines from songs with the word poop. And they'll be in the same quiz. I love it.
Right. Do you have a hand in the audio rounds too?
Not as much as I used to. I actually do have a new associate editor who does that. Okay. Quizmaster out of Colorado Springs, who's been with us since the very beginning, and he's been handling all of those for us. Hi, Aaron.
Because those seem like they could be a bitch to curate, and because I mean, if
they absolutely are, and especially after 8 years of doing it. Is that right? Coming up on 9, it's just, every time, if you want to write a round 2 where all the songs have a color of the rainbow in it, then just, don't.
Right.
Please don't, because we've used them all.
Yeah, I'll bet. That
Orange Crush, that's the only song that has orange in it.
Oh, good God, yeah.
And then, I mean, round 7s are there. Are a whole other thing, since they're normally movies, and
right.
Think about it, the biggest movie of last year was Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. and it made $350 million, and at $10 a ticket, that means that 10% of America saw it. That's
right.
It. That's the most popular movie there was. 1 in 10 people saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think part of quiz, you don't necessarily, that's why you guys do round 7, I remember there being rounds with like trailers. And while 10% of people may have seen Guardians of the Galaxy, like infinitely more people have seen the trailer.
And that's why I have banged that drum in the past. Use trailers as often as possible, especially if you're doing, we just had, the year-end movies, of course, because it's the end of the year.
Yep.
And, if you're doing comedies, did anybody actually see Let's Be Cops?
God, good point.
It did okay at the box office, but if you have a trailer where they're talking about not being cops, then maybe you're going, oh yeah, 10 months ago there was that movie where they were pretending to be cops. What was it called?
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, those guys from New Girl. What the hell was that movie called? You mentioned also speed rounds, and I've always been curious about the speed round. It seems like one of those things where almost inspiration finds you.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
Okay.
And I think that's true for everybody. If I'm, obviously at my job, I spend a lot of time just sort of looking around the internet. We have one coming up. I guess it'll be in the past by the time anybody hears this. So they just put out, Forbes just put out this list of the actors who made the most money this year, or who's, had the biggest box office grosses. Anytime I see top 10 anything, and it's something that I think people will be able to name, that automatically goes into a round.
So, oh, nice.
And, I get the World Almanac every year, and I'll, if it's something easy like 10 countries that export the most oil or whatever, you can do that. But, it does, it's another one of those things where we've done a lot now. I think we started that particular round format probably about 5 years ago, and, you'll still see name 8 of the Ivy League colleges.
Yeah.
We've done that.
No, I really like I personally am a fan of the speed round. One of my favorite ones was outside of George Clooney and Brad Pitt, name 8 of the other 9 Ocean's 11.
Oh, well, yeah. That would be a good one, actually.
Yeah, that was cool. And that was from several years ago, so I think you could put that one back in circulation if you wanted to. But the speed round is always just kind of fun because it's just a change of pace, in terms of gameplay. Is that something that you consider as you're putting together, a whole game?
Yeah, of course it is, and that's all. I mean, that's another thing that Jason does is make sure that we used to do a whole week of speed rounds at a time, and then a whole week of multiple choice rounds,
okay.
And then maybe a whole week of sooner or later's. just to keep it from being the same format every week, but now it's sort of up to him to direct that traffic and make sure that we've been pretty heavy on the speed rounds lately. I need to get a multiple choice round for, you know, tomorrow, for next Tuesday, whatever.
Are there types of rounds that you guys have that you don't do anymore, that the, you know, people have spoken and said, oh, we really hate this type of round, please don't do it anymore?
Sooner or later, it was actually the evolution of a round called, a round format called Say When.
Oh, holy shit, Say When.
Yeah, see, and that's, I think that's the reaction most people have when they hear the name. In fact, it's to the point where for Geek Bowl one year, we had a round called Say When that was about surrenders, just to, you know, make people groan when we revealed the title.
I remember that. Everyone freaked out.
Well, and that's when we found out that, you know, some people will just be dicks, basically. That's what killed Say When. I kept getting reports that people were, you know, stopping it after the first hint, and it's not like they knew, you know, they just wanted everybody to get a zero.
Like,
well, how is that fun for anybody?
Jesus, they were just scorching the earth just for the sake of being dicks.
Exactly, and so then we tried, I mean, for a little while, we tried doing a thing where, you know, if you're the person who yells stop, then we'll come out and, you know, mark your paper or whatever, and you get, like, -2 points, if whatever.
If you don't get it right.
But that was just obviously an administrative headache, and we have so many venues that, you know, are doing pretty big numbers every week that they couldn't really handle that. So
That's a burden on the quizmaster.
Yeah, exactly. So sooner or later it became a way to do kind of the same concept, you know, to reward the hardcore folks and still give a, you know, throw a bone to the people who aren't as knowledgeable on the subject.
Yeah.
But then I got tired of editing them, so pop up every once in a while, but you kind of got to impress me with the novelty of the theme at this point to get your sooner or later round in.
Yeah, totally. So
this is so inside baseball. I love it.
Well, I mean, this is John of all trades. It's, you know, I want to, one of the things I talk about on the origin story of my website is, you know, in Kill Bill, when she goes to Hattori Hanzo and, you know, he's like, this will be my finest sword. And he presents it to her and it's very ceremonial. And there's a lot of like mysticism and stuff. I thought to myself, he still has to like make a fucking sword. Like, he's got to go to a fire and forge some steel and pound it out. And like, how does he make the fucking sword?
Right.
Like, how does he actually make it good? Like, how is this superior to all other swords that apparently exist on the planet? They never show that.
That's in the DVD extras.
Right. It's actually a documentary on sword making. But, no, I've always been curious. Like, that's why I do this podcast, is because I really like to get into the nuts and bolts of, like, what makes the things that we like or that make the world go around, how do they actually work? So, no, I mean, this is everything I ever wanted to know, and I'm in a fortunate place that I get to ask the questions.
Yeah.
So.
I think we're a little bit of a black box in editorial.
Sure.
We're sort of off doing our own thing for the most part. I don't deal with quizmasters a lot unless they need a replacement because one of the rounds won't work for their venue or whatever. So.
And why might a round not work for a venue?
Well, you know, there are some places. If we are working a little bit edgy, then you know maybe there'll be some bars in some of our more, I would say, tetchy markets that don't want it. If we have, kind of any reference to Hurricane Katrina, I won't fly in New Orleans. They're obviously, for very good reasons, still sensitive about that.
I would say so, yeah.
Or, you know, maybe you just have a quiz at a sports bar and the manager is kind of on the fence about keeping us anyway, and maybe we don't want to, you know, do this round about fine art there and and give them reason to fire us. So,
right.
There are a few reasons. It doesn't happen very often, frankly. Like I said, we do try pretty hard to appeal to as wide a group of kind of learned people as possible. So.
Yeah, and I think overall you guys do a good job of that, and the evidence of that being, I asked Dicker, these are going to air out of order of, you know, in the way that the interviews I conducted, but what is the key to have, you know, to success in a Geeks Who Drink team? And he said it's having a diversity of knowledge.
Absolutely, and that's what we're trying to do all the time, and that's why, you know, I'm absolutely going to squash if you try to do that round that's all about Game of Thrones.
Right.
There's going to be some, we have themed quizzes for that reason, right? But
yeah,
there's going to be some team where nobody on the team has seen the show. It is still possible, even in 2015.
Right.
So, we've got to make sure that team doesn't get a zero, because if they get a zero, they're not coming back.
Well,
how I look at it. Maybe they won't. Maybe that's an overreaction and they'll say, well, it was still fun anyway, but I wouldn't want to be that guy sitting in the bar who just got zero and just understood that I have no chance because I didn't watch one TV show.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, knowing what I know, having played this as much as I have, the way you guys seem like you would be likely to structure the round would be like Games, Thrones, and Game of Thrones, right?
I believe we've done that round multiple times, actually.
Okay. Well, I mean, and that's one of those things where it's like, you know, a third of the questions are going to be about this, a third about this, and then a third about this show that you love, and probably the bonus question, too, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, we'll do that sometimes another of our favorite things to do is take two subjects that have nothing to do with each other and just make it half on each of them, without even a unifying theme. So the prototype of that is AIDS and ice cream. That's one of our old rounds that we did.
Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
That's kind of what we used to do with our team names, which, you know, a lot of teams like to go topical in terms of like what they do. We always just went for more generalized weirdness and sort of, I don't know, funniness. Yeah. Like, you know, we'd be Lieutenant Boobs in the Search for Vagina Cobbler, or giraffic sexual content, and our friend drew a bunch of giraffe porn on the answer sheet.
So, yeah, whole other books can be written on the art of team name choice.
Yeah, and our probably the pièce de résistance was when we were Muppet Afterbirth.
Yikes.
Yeah, which we, you know, I read somewhere online two words juxtaposed, like what could be the most horrible thing you could think of?
Disturbing and adorable.
Yeah. So, and the picture he drew on the back was just absolutely hideous.
What if every time you buy a piece of jewelry, that little pillow inside the box is actually a Muppet Afterbirth? This is the part of our show where we smoke weed and we're in college.
Right, yeah. It's like ambergris being used for perfume, right?
Yeah.
Perfect, yeah. Just beauty out of disgustingness.
What if the Muppets controlled us, man?
Yeah, bong rip. So you've been doing this, you said, for like 8 years?
I've been doing this for about 5 years now.
Okay. This is.
I have been sort of around with the company since the beginning. First as a player, then as just sort of a writer and a host there in Colorado Springs.
Okay.
But as far as a full time gig goes, yeah, I started that about 5 years ago.
Okay, and this has got to be one of those things where you almost never turn it off. I mean, because you know you're doing a quiz about pop culture and you know history and basically casting as wide a net as possible.
Yeah.
So is it hard for you to go out and turn it off?
Well, to an extent it is. I mean, I think that I'm kind of good at compartmentalizing that part of my brain. This is the therapy session of our.
Okay, perfect. This is Marin, where I ask why you hate me.
So. But it's also a job where I work from home, and it's a deadline job, and we're, you know, a daily publication, essentially. I've done the math. It's 22,000 questions a year. So,
holy shit.
So whenever anybody asks me, you know, hey, it must be great to work from home, I say, yeah, it is. The only three hard parts are getting started, keeping at it, and stopping. But from that, it's the best job there is. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, if I'm watching Sherlock at bedtime, am I thinking about ways we can use trivia questions? Yeah, not really. I probably should be. It would probably make some things a lot easier, but.
Right, but there comes a time where you just need some sanity, I imagine.
You know, the way that I got good at this job, too, was by learning shit in my spare time for, you know, pretty much all of my 36 years on the planet. So.
Okay.
There's just an awful lot of gray area. You know, if I'm reading something of my own interest, it is going into my memory and probably will pop up soon. But I don't keep a notebook by my bedside table either.
Well, a lot of people think I'm fucked up because I read more TV criticism than I watch TV.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of that way too.
Because I'll find myself with spare time and I'll try and sit down and binge watch something, and I just don't have that bone in me anymore because I'm like, this takes too much time. I'm wasting too much of my day. Whereas if I read, you know, Alan Sepinwall or, you know, the AV Club or
It feels more wholesome somehow. Like,
yeah, and I know I've never once seen an episode of The Wire, which I would like to, but I know a lot about it, having read so much about it.
And I'm one of those guys who watches SNL on the DVR and then immediately is looking at reviews on AV Club and stuff.
Like, I do the same thing, yeah. It's
just to see if people felt the same way about it that I did. I don't know why I would care, but...
I'm kind of the same way.
But that also does kind of inform my job a little bit too, though, because I need to know, you know, who do I hate? And when I say who do I hate, I mean who does America hate, you know?
I have
to kind of be, especially like on a recently stuff round, you know, I have to make sure that I kind of know the nuances of the news stories so that I'm not, you know, disparaging somebody who was just the victim of a tragedy or something like that, you know.
So you're not...
Make sure that I'm on the right side in any dispute that, you know, at least the quizmaster will be able to play it off as something that is not monstrous.
So that you're not turning into Ashton Kutcher reacting to the Joe Paterno thing the wrong way.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, that's the thing that, you know, sort of keeps me up at night is, holy shit, did I offend everyone for the wrong reason?
Right. Yeah. Are there sensibilities out of whack in the good way or in the bad way? In pro wrestling parlance, we refer to that as, you know, is this good heat? Do I want to see this guy get his ass kicked? Or do I hate this guy so much that I just want to turn the TV off?
Right. That's exactly it. And, you know, that's what I was... When I was talking about the sort of seven words you can't say earlier, that's exactly it. You know, you just got to understand what is this going to do to the temperature of the room if we say this? And what can we say that kind of means the same thing that won't have that same chilling effect? Or, you know, ultimately, how important is it for our, you know, goofy little entertainment company to have an official editorial opinion on this thing that's happening, be it a super duper current story or, you know, just sort of a general trend.
Right.
We've seen so many changes. I mean, it happens just on a monthly basis. Changes in ideas of, you know, sex positivity, of gender relations, of, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And of course of race relations, things like that. That is just, you know, the kind of joke that you could have done a year ago in a lot of cases, you can't do now. So staying on top of that is, it's just a part of my brain that I have to exercise, you know?
So it's not just content, but it's almost like the way that you frame the content.
It's the way we frame the content. It's the way that we feed the quizmasters. You know, we don't want to give them the seed of something that they can turn into, something offensive if they're wired that way, you know?
Yeah.
Like, almost, the extreme example would be, like, we don't want to make a joke about birthers, and it's a little bit of a dated reference now.
Right.
Then we don't want to find out that we had a quizmaster out there who really is a birther and who decided to launch a 5-minute interview about how Obama's from Kenya and, you know, just went on an N-word rampage, and then that gets tied to our company.
Yeah, that's got to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, that's a quizmaster, obviously, who won't work for us anymore, and we'll be pretty public about firing that quizmaster. But at the same time, I've got to look at what we did in editorial and said, well, why did he think that was going to be okay? You know, why did he react that way to this question? Maybe it's just because he's a total fuck-up, but, you know, maybe it's because I wasn't clear enough how I was being sarcastic. Of course, it's a thing that's terribly hard to convey and famously hard to convey in text in the first place.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's my sense of humor is so wry and dry and sarcastic that, you know, I put little dog whistles in the questions all the time.
Just, yeah.
You know, subconsciously even, that then wind up blowing up. I don't want to say that they wind up blowing up all the time, that's not true, but once a year or so, it blows up, and I'm like, oh shit, no, you're right. I should probably see that coming.
Maybe I should just write this in a plain way. And yeah, now I work a corporate job, and so the sensitivity there is certainly different than like on this podcast or in my real life, you know, where you can sort of joke around. But one of the things that's interesting is, and you'll hear comedians talk about this. Patton Oswalt famously talks about how that KFC bit that he does, the failure pile and the sadness bowl.
The sadness bowl, I know that bit, yeah.
Yeah, how it took on a life of its own. And you can never predict what this shit's going to do when it gets out of your hands. And at that point, you really have no control over it. So, I mean, the quality control in terms
of... it costs money somehow. That's just
the, right.
You know, that's just the...
So, I mean, this, you know, this is a fairly, you mentioned a lot of gray area in your life, and this is a fairly all-consuming type of job. What is your background that sort of led you to this point?
Well, like I said, my background is basically spending all of my spare time learning shit forever. I've never had much of a suntan.
Okay.
And that is not by coincidence.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's the answer to how you become good at something like this.
Well, whether you're shooting free throws, you know, yeah. to get into the NBA, you know, a
exactly.
lot of...
Exactly, and that is a much more useful thing to do, by the way, if you have to lucrative anyhow.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, when people ask me, and I'm sure we'll get to Jeopardy in a minute, but people ask, you know, how did you study for that? Like, well, I started as soon as I could read, and...
I was doing it without really thinking about it.
Exactly. I just kept doing it, never stopped. So I don't. If you're asking me for tips, you're gonna need a time machine.
Well, so did you grow up in Indiana?
Yeah. I moved back to my hometown about 5 years ago. So
okay.
I'm in rural Crawfordsville, Indiana. If you want to come by and say howdy.
Perfect.
We have apparently, as of yesterday, the cheapest gasoline in the nation.
Outstanding. Good show.
Our new claim to fame.
Beautiful and scenic Crawfordsville, Indiana, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, we have a couple of, like, historic sites, and, I love living back here now, actually. It's, I know it's not for everyone to go back to the little town they grew up in, but, you know, I'm learning more and more about my own past, just sort of by interacting with the people that I knew when I was a kid, which is a gigantic digression.
No, that's cool. I mean, that's what we do here.
Yeah. I even went to college here. You know, liberal arts school. I was.
And what college is that?
It's called Wabash College. It is, in fact, an all male liberal arts school.
Okay.
Just like 800 or 900 students. So.
Very nice.
It's pretty much a unicorn.
What was your major?
I majored in theater, minors in English and music.
Okay.
So I did not plan it out. Anything is the answer.
Right.
Which is that question, but you know. It does inform my work, absolutely.
Well,
I was a playwright in college, so.
Who are some of your favorite playwrights?
Oh, wow. Eugene Ionesco and Edward Albee and Dario Fo. I'm interested in absurdism and,
okay.
You know, I've always been interested in the edges of things more than the middle of them.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's that. In Colorado Springs, what I was doing for a living was working at a newspaper, and this was starting in 2006, which was...
Hey, perfect timing in terms of newspapers.
It was absolutely perfect timing, and I'll tell you why. I was an editorial assistant, you know, just absolutely entry-level, doing, like, sports agate, and, you know, so-and-so got promoted. That was the kind of stuff. I was doing obituaries, too.
Okay, perfect.
When I got hired in, and... lo and behold, everybody started getting laid off in droves. And so everybody sort of, who was left, kept kind of noticing, this guy seems like he could probably write, and why don't we send him out to a house fire? And, you know, one thing led to another, and within 3 or 4 years, I was editing a zoned edition of a newspaper. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I'm the product of great fortune that way, because I just got in at exactly the right time to be a person with no experience.
Well, you were probably the cheapest guy in the newsroom, right?
A little bit of talent. Exactly. They didn't have to pay me.
Right.
And that's how I got my experience that then wound up sort of directly leading to this job. You know, editorial experience and a track record of putting out good rounds and, you know, never really butting heads. And
working on deadline, right?
The funny thing is, it was like, really, it was 2 weeks after I got this job that I went out for my audition for Jeopardy. So,
okay, yeah, let's talk about that, because...
Yeah, because people always ask, you know, like, did you get the job because you were on Jeopardy? Like, no, it was actually, like...
The opposite.
It was almost backwards. Like, it's just everything, my life became about trivia in 2010 is what happened.
Yeah, you're a six-time Jeopardy champ, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And you were on, the show's aired in 2011, was it?
Yeah, it was in April of 2011. We shot them right around Thanksgiving in 2010.
Okay, so that's like a 6 month lead time?
It was right around four, yeah.
Okay, so, oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, about, four, okay. I think most people are familiar with, you take an online test first.
Yep.
And then you sort of wait around to hear how you did about that. You basically take it in the dark, right?
There is a great deal of waiting involved in the process.
Okay.
That's exactly true. I don't remember. I mean, it was probably late January when they normally did the online test. And then I think it was maybe like mid-March is when they emailed me and said, hey, you passed. We're doing these auditions in May in Chicago, which for me is like a three-hour train ride.
Yeah, okay.
So I went and did that. You take another test.
Is that where you do it in like, I've read one account of this before. And are you in like a hotel ballroom or something?
That's exactly it. That's what they normally do them. This was the Westin Hotel right by the John Hancock Center.
Okay. So you're just, and is it a written test again at that point?
It's a written test. It's the exact same format. It's 50 questions, and they have, maybe they don't have them anymore, but they used to have Johnny Gilbert, like, you know, doing tape recorded questions.
Oh, wow. So
that was pretty cool. Yeah. I don't remember. I auditioned twice, actually.
Okay.
Quite a few years apart. Anyhow, the thing is, they never tell you what the cutoff is for that test, or how many you got right, or whether you passed or not, actually.
It's like a fucking sommelier test.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really, I mean, they say, I might as well just go ahead and I'll just parrot their party line, but more people apply for Jeopardy every year than apply to Harvard.
Okay,
so,
nice.
You know, they really don't. They're very professional, but they don't, you know, they don't owe you any extra courtesy, I guess I put it that way.
Right, they're very sort of clinical in the way they do it.
Exactly, yes. Thank you! Get in touch. And so, it was October when I looked at my caller ID and it said California.
Yeah.
And I was like, who the fuck is calling me from California? At this point, I literally had forgotten that I auditioned for Jeopardy.
Well, seriously, this was what, again, like 4 or 5 months later, right?
5, 6 months later, yeah, exactly. And and sure enough, it's one of the contestant coordinators, and would you like to be, do you think you could come out in November to be on the show? And I was like, well, let me check. And, you know, I hung up on her, because out of the blue.
Right.
I'll call you right back. I did. Is kind of history.
So before you go on the show, though, is there, like, are there any more tests or any more hurdles before you sort of do that?
I heard
something about a mock game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was about to say something about that. You stand up and play for about 5 minutes, and they want to make sure that you can basically, well, that you can understand the buzzer instructions.
Okay.
And that you can project your voice, and, you know, that you're not going to just blubber and say something, you know, mingle that six of one, half a dozen of another expression.
Right.
Do the interview. And that's just about it. You know, will you look okay on TV? And apparently those standards are pretty lax, too, because
okay.
This is a podcast. You can't see me. But you can Google me.
Okay.
For short Jeopardy, you'll see.
There will be photos on the accompanying blog piece to this interview.
It might not give you the full effect, though. You know,
fair enough.
I'll put it this way. On Twitter, they were speculating as to my V-card status.
Your what?
My V-card status.
Oh, Jesus. That's nice.
One of my opponents actually just put up a blog post about how she got boob-shamed. So it could be worse. I mean, people, like I said, they're dicks. People just are.
Well, I mean, part of the joy... The challenge with social media is it's taking all the awful shit you used to say anonymously about people on TV, which is one of the joys of watching TV, let's be honest.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you can go, oh, you dumb motherfucker. Like, especially when you're watching something like Wheel of Fortune.
Right.
But, you know, people...
And now we get to see what you said.
Yeah, now everyone gets to see the bile that resides in everyone, which is, I would say, strong. But, so...
I shaved for the Tournament of Champions.
Okay, good.
I probably did look a little bit better, but it was almost directly as a response to everyone calling me neckbeard.
I don't grow facial hair very well. I shave maybe twice a week. But when it comes in, I can grow just a sick ass neck beard like Russell Crowe in Gladiator. And so I feel you. I tried to grow a beard one time and I walked into my college radio station and my buddy goes, "Hey, what's up, chin strap?" I go, I'm shaving this thing today.
I still wear it because, I mean, it is still a little bit better than the nightmare underneath, but...
Oh, fair enough.
I managed to lose a little bit of weight before the Tournament of Champions, so...
Okay.
It came out all right.
Good. So what is taping day like when you?
No, 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 didn't love me.
What is taping day like?
I know that you do love me. I'm sorry, what's that?
What is taping day like?
Sure, sure. You know, this is where the professionalism really comes out, because really, like, basically from the moment you get off the elevator in the hotel lobby until you go home at 6 p.m., or go back to the hotel, rather, every minute of your day is managed.
Okay. What time in the morning are you getting off the elevator?
Getting off the elevator is about 8, something like that.
Okay, so it's like a 10-hour day.
It's a good long day. And, I mean, my day started 4 hours earlier because I was in a strange town and about to be on fucking Jeopardy, so...
a little nervous?
I slept 4 hours each night and still did that. So you go, that's my humble brag, I guess.
Yeah, no shit.
Everybody else probably had the same experience, though, so it's it's a great equalizer.
Right.
Sleeplessness, nervous sleeplessness. You're never alone, like, for a second, which is really comforting. I'm sure they arrived at that after a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
Right? That they should, you know, just be around and engaging you at all times. There are, like, 3 or 4 contestant coordinators. They're all very personable. They've all been there since, like, the beginning of the show, actually.
Right. So they pick you up, they drive you, they give you a lift.
You settle to the studio.
Okay.
And when you get there, you're in the green room you're either in the green room or out on the stage rehearsing for like the first 4 hours you're there.
You're rehearsing? So what, are you answering more questions then?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they just want to get you out under the lights. You see, hopefully get that first little bit of jitters out of your system.
Okay.
You know, you sign your name in on the lectern just to see what that's like. And, it's a good sense of, yep, here you are. This is what it is. And we're about to do this.
Okay.
You have to fill out your little card that has, like, 5 possible interview topics for Alex to ask you about after the first commercial break.
Right.
And so there's a little bit of banter about that.
Is it hard to come up with that? Because
Yes.
My friend and I in college used to watch Jeopardy. I mean, every day. It's what you do in college, right?
Yeah.
And so we tried to come up with the most, like, the dumbest interview story that you could possibly come up with. And one of them was, for me, this asinine story about playing the video game Red Alert 2. And just because I wanted Alex to sort of react to that. But,
That's also why he has 5 choices, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But in my fantasy, punk rock 20-year-old kid, just going, oh yeah, we're not going to talk about that. But this one time I was smoking clove cigarettes and, basically just, I know that would never fly, but so yeah, I've heard it's kind of torturous coming up with those because you're like, God, who gives a shit? This is my life, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I mean, like, if I were to do it now, I would have a lot more stories.
Sure.
Just because, I was, 31 and, what, a credit card debt.
Right.
I don't take vacations. You get the people on there who are like, 45-year-old lawyers and.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This one time I was in Bangkok and blah, 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 blah. Exactly. Like, this one time I remember the time that I got the 120th star in Super Mario 64. It was a blessed event and I could never get up onto the roof to see Yoshi.
Yeah, totally.
It never occurred to me that there was a cannon that I had seen from the very beginning.
Yeah, that should have fired me. Exactly. Yeah.
But,
So you rehearse.
Yeah, you rehearse. And by the way, as long as we're on that subject, I did have a story about how when I was 16 years old, I had Dan Quayle autograph my dictionary.
Okay.
And in 7 episodes of the show, Alex Trebek never asked me about it. So I don't know if he's a friend of Dan Quayle's and didn't want to embarrass him or what.
Huh.
I mean, it was clearly the cream of the crop as far as my stories went. On an actual show, I answered a question about how my wife had won a copy of the Wii version of Jeopardy in the audience the day before.
That sounds like a scintillating yarn that you wove for Alex.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the reason why local children call me Mr. Awesome Pants, which, again, it's that Dan Quayle autographed my dictionary.
Yeah, okay, but goddammit, why do they call you Captain Awesome Pants?
Mr. Awesome, right.
Captain Underpants is a different thing. And you were confusing me there. Okay, why do they call you Mr. Awesome Pants?
Mr. Awesome, I was a substitute teacher for a little while, and they would always make fun of my name being short because I'm 6'4", so.
Oh, nice.
This started talking about Mr. Awesome Pants,
I got a friend, he lives in Texas, and his nickname is Short, and he's like 6'4", too. I think that's like a law.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so you get done rehearsing for a while, and then what happens?
Well, then it's time to tape. And the thing that people are always kind of surprised to find out is they do 5 shows a day.
Holy shit!
Yeah, and they do 2 shows, or they do 2 days a week. So they do 2 weeks worth of shows in 2 days.
Nice. Not a bad gig if you can get it.
I was going to say, Alex Trebek makes like $10 million a year, and he works 2 days every 2 weeks. I don't know, he might be in the offices other days, I don't know.
So
he's one of the producers after all.
Jesus, that's like 52 days a year that...
That's some quick math.
Well, if you reduce the fraction, you know, it's 1 day a week.
Well, and they do reruns all summer, so it's not even that. We do more questions than Jeopardy.
Well played. That's a nice little differentiator. So you do 5 shows a day. You're coming in as a new contestant. That means you played 5 times in 1 day?
Yeah, I only played 4 times in 1 day because I was the second episode of the first day in the studio. I lost right before lunch the second day. But that's exactly, they shoot it more or less in real time as you see it on TV. So, I mean, it's not like there aren't pauses between questions where they're adjusting things. I mean, like I said, they're professionals, so
right. Even
the commercial breaks are roughly the same length that you see them on TV. They come out and freshen up your makeup and give you a little drink of water or whatever.
No, and they're timed out because, you know, they're syndicated, so they gotta fit this into a very specific window.
I mean, they can edit. They do, like, you know, if you're standing there, I think it's like 6 seconds before they sound the buzzer if nobody's answering it, and they'll cut that down sometimes. They do a little bit of editing, but what I'm saying is, you know, they shoot that 22-minute episode in a half an hour.
Okay, yeah.
And then you have 10 minutes before the next episode.
Okay.
You have long enough to change your shirt.
Jesus.
And get more makeup. That's it. But like I said, that's exactly, I mean, it's a fantastic way to manage nerves, because the only time it ever really occurred to me during that whole 2-day whirlwind, the only time it really occurred to me to get nervous in the building was the one time I had to stop production for a second to do some kind of judging thing, and then they make you like turn around just in case they happen to reveal some other answer, you know?
Right.
They make you turn around and face the back wall, and that's the only time in the whole day that nobody's talking to you.
Wow.
And that's when I go, holy shit, I'm on the set of Jeopardy. And then, it lasts for 30 seconds or something, and then I'm back playing again. So.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, were you just wiped at the end of the day? Because that's like getting trivia questions just, like, shot at you by fire hose, like, you know?
Yeah, I don't remember being that tired, honestly. I mean, it was 6 p.m., I was in L.A. for the first time, and I had just won $65,000.
Okay, fat. Okay, that's awesome.
And I had my whole family with me. And I do mean, like, my whole family. I had, like, 7 people traveled with me who did not know if I was going to win a single game.
Right.
Just for the experience. So I took them all out to dinner, and, you know, of course I paid for it.
Well, yeah.
It's like getting the hole-in-one at the golf course. And then, you know, sort of went back to the hotel and... in bed with the wife, and we're just talking about what happened and, trying to figure out how we're going to stay quiet about it for 4 months.
Yeah, no kidding.
We're not allowed to tell anybody.
Right. And then, so then you had to go back the next day, was it?
Back the next day and shoot what wound up being 3 more shows, yep.
Wow.
So, and then by that point, I was super sleep deprived because I had 2 4-hour nights in a row. So
yeah, were you just like too wired for the experience?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, honestly, I don't even these days. I don't even need that kind of excuse. I'm always waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and can't get to bed for an hour. But you know, traveling, it's hard to do the night, etc. And a little bit of nerves. Like I said, I don't remember feeling nervous at the studio almost ever.
Oh, that's cool.
I had the mindset that this is my only chance to wipe out these credit cards, so I better, nut up and answer some trivia questions.
Are the taxes as much of a bitch as everyone says they are?
No, I mean, just sort of, it counts as income, so it would bump me up to a different bracket for
okay.
But I think I want to pay in 20% on it.
Gotcha. I've heard it's worse if it's something like Price is Right, where...
I'm sure that if it had been like a million... then they probably would have taken a lot more of that. But.
Yeah, or, if it's goods, then it's, like, different.
Oh, that could be, too. I don't know. My mom's an accountant. I'm terrible with numbers, so.
Yeah, I have 2 degrees in communication, so.
If the IRS is listening and I just said something I shouldn't have. blaming you. I'm sending you the bill.
Oh, perfect. That there's so much money in this podcasting game.
Yeah, no, that's what I've always heard.
Yeah, no, this is this is the new bonanza.
Yeah.
So So since you won six times, that means you got to go back for Tournament of Champions, right?
Yes, and we don't need to talk about that.
No.
Now, I'm told by sort of Jeopardy historians that it was basically the most brutal quarterfinal ever. Like, it was the first time that two super champs had met in the first round of the Tournament of Champions.
Oh, that sucks.
As if that weren't enough, the other guy won like 160,000 in four games, so he just murdered his opponents on the original run. And I just couldn't buzz in. I mean, I wound up in Double Jeopardy getting a few questions that they didn't know, but if it was anything that we all knew, I couldn't buzz in. So
what is that? I mean, that's got to be the trick to Jeopardy, because especially at the Tournament of Champions level, you're all more or less at the same sort of skill level in terms of answering the questions. It's got to come down to buzzer speed, right?
That's exactly it. I mean, that's 100% it. Yeah.
Was that frustrating then?
We had in the Jeopardy round of my Tournament of Champions game a category on the interstate that runs by my house.
Okay.
And I think I got in on one of those five.
Oh God.
So yeah, it's frustrating. And
did you feel like Patrick Swayze and Ghost, just like looking at this shit and not being able to do anything, which is probably the weirdest thing you've been asked?
No, I often feel like Patrick Swayze for various reasons.
Sure.
Especially when I'm doing glistening Tai Chi in the moonlight.
Right, but basically you're Patrick Swayze watching Tony Goldwyn terrorize your wife and you can't do anything about it. But in the context of a Jeopardy game.
Yes, that's exactly correct. Now, people, again, these same Jeopardy historians, they do exist, by the way, and it's, well, the less said about that, the better. But, you know, they always remember me because I was the guy who stood with my buzzer behind my back.
Okay.
And so for my family in the studio at the Tournament of Champions, they couldn't tell that I was trying to buzz in. They thought that I had just, like, completely, you know, passed out or something. When the contestant coordinators came out at the first commercial break, as they always do, they wanted to test our buzzers to make sure they were working.
Yeah.
And I believe I was at the far left podium, so I was the first one. So she comes out and goes, "Christopher, hit your buzzer." And I said, "I know, right?" And then Alex stole that joke when Double Jeopardy started.
Alex stole your joke.
He said something like, "Christopher, make sure you have your buzzer in your hand and let's start." I was like, "Oh, you bastard." He does say something similar, like, I think just about every show, but this time it really seemed like he was jumping my joke. So
yeah, well,
so he gets paid enough. I can just say terrible things about him. It's fine.
Yeah. Otherwise, Alex Trebek, good guy, fun to talk to.
Yeah, well, you know, every moment that I spent with the man was on camera.
Okay.
He doesn't come by the green room and hang out or anything, so.
He doesn't regale you with stories from Canada or whatever?
Not really. And the interview, of course, is its own special nightmare, as I think any contestant will tell you.
And viewer.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you know, the really funny ones you'll always see on YouTube and Daily Motion the next day, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, why bother? Just skip past them. But during the end credits, it's especially weird because those things, I mean, they're pretty long. And, you know, you are standing there out in the middle of the stage. You're talking to this 70-something-year-old man who is a multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
And the two people whose dreams you just crushed. So, small talk is kind of weird. It's not... It's not the least awkward thing you'll ever do.
Well, it's funny. It's like when you watch baseball games and you watch a runner get to first and he's talking to the first baseman. I'm always fascinated by what that conversation is.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be that. And I found anecdotally when I read about it, it's usually like, "Hey, where's a good place to get a steak in town tonight?"
Yeah, exactly. So. Now, this is different because, you know, it doesn't occur to you in that moment, especially my first game I won in such a surprising way. I was in third place going to Final Jeopardy.
Nice.
That it doesn't really occur to you in that moment how fundamentally different your experience was from the other two people who were on stage with you. So I'm trying to go over the tail of the tape and, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, you're trying to Monday morning quarterback it?
like, I can't believe you didn't know that one. Not thinking, well, that's really insensitive for somebody who's, you know, probably trying to keep her shit together.
Right.
So that she's not crying on national TV. You know? So I always, that's like the one thing that I look back at and kind of feel bad about is I wonder how many things I said that were just incredibly asinine because I was stoked about winning.
Yeah.
And still on TV for the first time in my life.
Right.
Completely, completely bewildered. So I'm sorry to everyone whose dreams are crushed if you're listening.
Yeah, well, you know what? The thing about Jeopardy is, though, everyone's going to lose eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, even Brad Rutter lost, you know, even Ken Jennings lost. They both lost to that fucking robot who...
Yeah,
like,
that's the only time Brad Rutter ever lost, actually.
Oh, no kidding.
To the robot, yeah, because he did his first run in the days when he got kicked off after five episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fond of saying that I'm only the 14th super champ in Jeopardy history, but
nice.
It's more a quirk of the format change than anything else.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's...
Ken Jennings, I think, was the first or second, actually.
Yeah, I watched that whole run, and then when we were all waiting for him to lose, because, you know, we were snarky, shitty college kids, but...
Right.
And he finally did, and one of my roommates missed it, and he was so pissed off. But, yeah, and then the woman who beat him didn't even win again.
Nancy Zerg.
Nancy Zerg. Wow. You've proven your street cred as a trivia writer.
They still call it the Zerg Cam. I got to be on the Zerg Cam, which is when they, like the producers know who has won, and so they put the camera on the face of the surprise winner just so they can record that moment.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I got to star on the Zerg Cam.
That's cool, man. That's a big deal.
So.
Well, I'll tell you what, Christopher, we need to wrap up.
Sure.
This was enormously insightful. I am, and I've said this throughout all the podcasts, just a huge Geeks Who Drink fan. And, after talking to you, it's awesome to hear just sort of how you guys curate, all the quizzes and, you know, what goes into it. It was enormously insightful for me and just makes me excited to go out and continue to play quiz.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, it's one of those things where it's a new enough industry that we're still kind of fumbling our way around it in a lot of ways. I mean, having this kind of continuity for 5 years now helps a lot, but, you know, we don't have a lot of other people to compare ourselves to, so.
No, certainly not.
But I'm one of those guys who, you know, I will get super duper bored if we're not improving what we do all the time, so. Yeah, and we are, I think, so.
I'd be inclined to agree. Are you on Twitter, Facebook, anything like that? Anything you want to plug?
Well, obviously you've got to go to the Geeks Who Drink Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff.
Of course, yeah. No, we'll be plugging that all throughout this entire series.
Me, I was actually telling you before the interview started that Skype is one of those things that didn't exist when I was young enough to really understand it, and Twitter is another of those things, so... I'm afraid you can't follow me on Twitter. I do have the Christopher Short Jeopardy Super Champ Facebook page that is never updated.
But, yeah, I actually looked at that a little bit before we got started, and...
Are you my one like this week?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, actually.
I was like, what the hell? Why is somebody liking my Jeopardy page?
Hey, you know what? Just me doing my due diligence. What can I say?
Hey.
So.
I know.
Awesome, Christopher. Well, it was... just an enormous pleasure talking to you, and continued success to you, man. And let's have fun not watching Game of Thrones together.
Yeah, I will very much look forward to that, and I hope that you'll edit out all the really terrible dick jokes.
All right, man, you got it. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
That wraps up episode 44 of the John of All Trades podcast. Christopher Short, it was awesome talking to you, man. It was so great getting to peek behind the curtain of Geeks Who Drink, and how the questions come to be. Also, thanks for talking about your Jeopardy experience. I love that show, and anytime I get to learn a little bit more about it, it excites me. Additionally exciting, 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES, proud sponsor of the John of All Trades podcast, and your one-stop shop for all your web solutions, everything that you need. Social media marketing, website building, website design, campaign activation, reaching people in any way that they can be reached, they are on top of it. The number 4, DEGRE.ES, proud sponsor of the John of All Trades podcast. I'm done for this week. Geek Month wraps up next week, where we talk to Geeks Who Drink founder John Dicker. That, I promise you, is a very stimulating chat and different from the previous three. And he's going to give you some insight into the foundation of the company, where it's going, some new shit that he's talking about. It's awesome. So stay tuned next week. John Dicker joins us to wrap up Geek Month here on the John of All Trades podcast. We will see you next week. As I like to say, say goodnight, Gracie. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, the sound quality could have been better. Maybe it was Skype. I didn't get a photo with him, and, you know, the chick with braces didn't want to score. But other than that, pretty good. What? Say goodnight, Gracie.